himself, even he did not know, was a troubling one.
Tessa didn't have to apologize, he said eventually. I should.
I'm sorry for ruining our vacation.
Nothing's ruined, said Alec. It was the echo of what Magnus had said earlier that made him look at Alec at last. When he did, he found Alec smiling at him faintly. Truth came tumbling helplessly from Magnus's lips, as it sometimes did around Alec.
I don't understand what's happening.
Alec said,
we'll figure it out.
Magnus knew there had been times in his long life when he was furious and lost. He might not recall the Crimson Hand, but he remembered the first man he had ever killed, when he was a child with another name in a land that would become Indonesia. Magnus had been a person he now regretted being, but he could not wipe away the red stains of his past. He didn't want Alec to see those stains, or be touched by them. He did not want Alec to think of him the way he knew other shadow hunters thought of him. There had been other loves in Magnus's life who would have run screaming long before now. And Alec was a shadow hunter. He had his high duty, more sacred to the Nephilim than love.
If you felt you had to tell the Clave, Magnus said slowly, I would understand.
Are you joking? Alec demanded. I'm not going to repeat any of these stupid lies to the Clave. I'm not going to tell anyone. Magnus, I promise I won't. Alec's expression was appalled. Magnus was shaken by the intensity of his own relief, by how much it mattered that Alec had not believed the worst.
I swear, I truly don't remember anything.
I believe you. We can handle this. We just need to find and stop whoever's actually in charge of the Crimson Hand. Alec shrugged.
Okay, let's do that then.
Magnus wondered if he would ever get used to being surprised by Alec Lightwood. He hoped not.
Also, we'll find out why you can't remember this. We'll figure out who did it and why. I'm not worried.
Magnus was worried. Tessa believed in him because she was kind. Astonishingly, Alec believed in him. Even dazzled and dizzy with relief over Alec, Magnus could not entirely banish his own creeping unease. He couldn't remember, and so it was possible, not likely, but possible. He might have done something then that he would be ashamed of now. Magnus wished he could be sure he deserved Alec's faith. He wished he could swear to Alec that he had never committed any unforgivable sins. But he could not.
Chapter 4. Much Abides.
On their first night in Paris, Alec hadn't been able to sleep. He'd risen from bed and paced the floor. He kept looking at Magnus asleep in their bed, the bed they slept in together. Nothing else had happened in that bed yet, and Alec was torn between hope and fear when he thought about what might happen there soon. Magnus's silky black hair was spread on the white pillow. His skin was rich brown against the sheets. Magnus's strong, lean arm was flung out into the space where Alec had been, a slender gold bracelet glittering on his wrist. Alec couldn't entirely believe this was happening to him. He didn't want to mess it up. A week later, he felt exactly the same. He didn't care if they were fighting a cult, or in a hot air balloon, or, for that matter, fighting a cult from the platform of a hot air balloon, which was starting to feel like a plausible future development in his life. He was just happy to be with Magnus. He'd never imagined that a romantic vacation with someone he really wanted to be with was something he could actually have, or even something it was okay to want. That said, he didn't particularly want his father to hear about his new boyfriend's possible status as founder of a demon-worshipping cult, and he went cold all over at the idea of the Clave hearing these whispers about Magnus. Eventually, they would probably hear about it through other channels, no matter how closely Alec and Magnus guarded the information. The law is hard, But it is the law, his people said, and Alec knew how hard it could be. He had seen how the Clave treated Shadowhunters under suspicion of wrongdoing. It would be far worse for a downworlder. Alec had seen Clary's downworlder friend Simon thrown in prison when Simon had done nothing at all. The thought of Magnus, such a bright presence, being put away in the dark, made Alec physically flinch. Last night, they had both gone to bed shortly after Tessa had left, but Magnus had tossed and turned restlessly. At one point, Alec had woken briefly and discovered Magnus sitting bolt upright in bed, staring into the darkness. When Alec had left this morning, Magnus had been asleep, but splayed awkwardly on the bed as though his body had given up in exhaustion mid-thrash. His mouth hung open. He was not the picture of grace he normally presented. Alec was used to feeling a combination of affection and annoyance toward the people he loved. Typically, he'd start the relationship with a feeling of total annoyance and minimal affection, and then as time passed, the annoyance diminished and the affection grew. This described the arc of his relationship with Jace, his parabatai and closest friend, and more recently described how he felt about Clary Fairchild when she'd come into their lives. Clary had had her own lost memories, and the return of those memories had helped win a war. In that case, Magnus had done the memory charms himself, and now it seemed someone had messed around with Magnus's memories years and years before. Alec had never found Magnus annoying at all. He wasn't sure what to make of that. Chaos swirled and orbited around Magnus like a cloud of glitter, and Alec's own tolerance of that chaos never ceased to astonish him. Now, he made his way back to Magnus's apartment, returning from his morning workout. It was a cool morning, and a layer of dew blanketed much of Paris. The sun was beginning to peek over the tops of the buildings on the horizon. Magnus's apartment was intimidatingly nice, but there were no training rooms and nobody to train with, so Alec had to improvise. He had discovered a swimming pool next to the river. For some reason, the people of Paris had built a place to swim next to a place they could swim. Mundanes were strange. Alec had ended up swimming laps in the pool. His hair and clothes were still damp. A woman in very large sunglasses she could not possibly need whistled at him and called out, "Bogos," as she went by. Now Alec high-stepped up the front stairs of Magnus's building and bounded up the four flights to the apartment, taking three steps at a time. He opened the front door of the apartment, calling, "Magnus!" He paused. "What the hell?" Magnus was in the middle of the living room, floating knee-height off the ground, orbited by dozens of books and photographs. Three large walnut bookcases, summoned from his Brooklyn loft, with most of their contents spilled on the floor, took up the right half of the room. One of the shelves was tilted on one corner and looked as if it was about to tip over and smash into the window. Plates of half-eaten pastries littered the table and chairs. The entire room seemed to be immersed in black and white static, which blanketed it with an eerie, ghostly sheen. An occasional white flash would wash out the room. It seemed, Alec thought, hugely, obviously demonic in nature. "Magnus? What's going on?" The warlock's head swiveled around until his eyes settled on Alec. They were glassy. He blinked and then brightened.
"Alexander, you're back. How was your cardio?"
"It was fine," said Alec slowly. "Is everything all right?"
"Just doing some research. I was trying to figure out how and where and when I could possibly have a missing memory, especially one that covers the amount of time it would take to establish a demon-worshipping cult, so I decided to go through all the events in my life chronologically."
"That sounds like it might take a while," said Alec. Magnus was talking rapidly, reveling in his investigation, or maybe he had drunk too much coffee. Alec noticed three French presses and a half dozen coffee mugs floating among the debris. Magnus had told him not to worry, but it appeared that Magnus himself was worrying a lot.
You see, continued Magnus, memories rarely stand alone. They are interconnected, created from other memories that give meaning to them. Each specific memory will help in producing even more, giving those new ones their meanings. It's like a giant spider web. If you make one specific memory disappear, you leave the other strands dangling.
Alec thought this over.
So all you have to do is find a piece of memory that leads to nothing.
Exactly.
But what if you just forgot something? You can't possibly remember every moment that's happened in your life.
That's why I got help.
He gestured at the objects in the air surrounding him.
I summoned my photo albums from Brooklyn. I've been going through any moments that could lead to the creation of the Crimson Hand, and then I've been magically imprinting the memories onto paper so I can properly catalog them.
Alec furrowed his brow.
So you're scrapbooking?
Magnus made a face. To the lay observer, what I'm doing might look similar, yes.
Alec looked at the photos as they floated by. One appeared to be of Magnus on a flying carpet over a desert. The next was of Magnus at a ball in Victorian clothes, waltzing with a coldly beautiful blonde woman. Another showed Magnus with his arms around a handsome older man's shoulders.
Alec leaned forward, squinting at it. He thought he could make out tears on Magnus's face.
Before his fingers could grasp the photo, it flittered away as if it were a leaf, somersaulting in the air.
That one is sort of a private memory, Magnus said hastily.
Alec didn't press the issue. This wasn't the first time in their fledgling relationship that he'd bumped up against Magnus's past, and his boyfriend had closed the door on him.
Alec hated it, but he was trying to be understanding.
They didn't know each other all that well yet, but they would.
Everyone had secrets.
Alec had kept secrets from those closest to him before. There were a lot of reasons Magnus might be holding back.
Alec wanted Magnus to be able to tell him everything. At the same time, he didn't know if he could handle what everything might be. He remembered the sick, scared feeling in his stomach when he'd asked whether Magnus and the beautiful brown-haired woman he was looking at so fondly used to be a couple. He'd been so relieved when Magnus and Tessa said they were just friends. Maybe Alec would never have to meet any of Magnus's exes. Maybe he would never have to think about them. Ever. There might not be any in New York. They might all be dead, Alec told himself encouragingly, and then felt bad about that.
Did you find what you were looking for?
He asked, doing his best to smooth over the momentary awkwardness.
Not yet, said Magnus. I'm just getting started.
Alec opened his mouth to volunteer to help, and then shut it again before he spoke. It was one thing to want Magnus to open up to him, but another to try to enter the swirl and ferment of centuries of memories, covering however many hundreds of people, dozens of homes, thousands of events.
This will be a long, messy process, said Magnus gently.
Seize this opportunity to see a few of the Parisian sites, Alexander. Some of the minor churches, or one of the smaller art museums.
Okay, said Alec. I'll be back in a little while to check in.
Great, said Magnus, and gave Alec a slight sideways smile as if to thank him for understanding. So Alec spent most of the day taking in some of the more famous sites of the city. He knew Paris was known for its churches, so he decided to make a survey of some of the most famous. He started amid the throngs at Notre Dame and went on to the stunning stained glass of Saint-Chapelle, the famously massive pipe organ at Saint-Eustache, the peaceful shadowed hush of Saint-Sulpice. In the Église de la Madeleine, he gazed at its statue of Joan of Arc for much longer than he expected to. Joan stood prepared for battle, both hands on her sword, which she brandished upright, prepared to strike. Her face was tilted up at a sharp angle, as though whatever she faced down was much taller than her. It was a very shadow hunter pose, though as far as he knew, she hadn't been one. The determination and grit in her expression as she beheld some unseen monster towering over her was inspiring nonetheless. For all the beauty of rose windows and Corinthian columns he'd beheld that day, it was the expression on Joan's face that stayed with him for hours after. In each church, he couldn't help but wonder where the stash of Nephilim weapons was hidden. In almost every church in the world, a Shadowhunter rune pointed the way to a cache of arms available for their use in case of emergency. He could have asked any of the Shadowhunters of the Paris Enclave, of course, but he was keeping his and Magnus's presence in the city quiet. In Notre Dame, he spent a few minutes examining the stone floors, looking for a rune he recognized, but he was beginning to attract looks. Most visitors to Notre Dame spent their time there looking up, not down at the floor. He gave up. The place was massive, and the weapons cache could be anywhere. Mostly he attracted no attention, but he had a terrible moment when, among a crowd crossing the Pont des Arts, he spotted two figures with familiar marks on their bare arms. He turned abruptly and walked the other way, taking the first turn into a narrow alley that he could. When he emerged after a few minutes, the unknown Shadowhunters were gone. He stood on the crowded street for a moment, then, feeling very alone. He wasn't used to hiding from other Shadowhunters. They were his colleagues and allies, after all. It was an unusual, uncomfortable sensation, but with this cult business to sort out, he didn't want to cross paths with them. It wasn't that he didn't trust Magnus. He didn't believe for a second that Magnus was involved with the Crimson Hand right now. But might Magnus have been involved with them as a joke? A couple hundred years ago, on a drunken night? That was closer to the realm of possibility. He wanted to call Magnus, but he didn't want to bother him in the middle of his research. Walking on, he took out his phone and called home. A few seconds later, he heard his sister's familiar voice. "Hey, how's Paris?" A grin curved Alec's mouth. "Hi, Isabel." In the background, he heard a terrible crash and another voice. "Is that Alec? Give the phone to me." "What was that noise?" Alec asked, mildly alarmed.
"Oh, it's just Jace," Isabel said dismissively. "Hands off, Jace. He called me."
"No, the sound like a thousand trash can lids falling out of the sky."
"Oh, Jace was swinging a big axe on a chain when you called," Isabel said.
"Jace, your axe is stuck in the wall."
"It's not important, Alec.
Tell me about your trip. How's Magnus? And I don't mean his well-being."
Alec coughed.
"I mean, how are his skills? And I'm not talking about the magical ones," Isabel clarified.
"Yes, I picked up on your meaning," said Alec dryly. He did not exactly have an answer for Isabel on that topic. When he and Magnus had been dating in New York, there had been several times when Alec really wanted to take things further, but he was scared off by the immensity of his feelings. They had kissed. They had fooled around a little. That was it so far. And Magnus had never pushed. Then the war came, and after the war, Magnus asked him to go on vacation to Europe, and he said yes. Alec had presumed they both understood that meant he was ready to go anywhere and do anything with Magnus. He was over 18. He was an adult. He could make his own decisions. Only Magnus had not made a move. Magnus was always so careful with Alec. Alec wished he was a little less careful, because Alec was not very good at conversations, especially awkward conversations about feelings. That is, all conversations about feelings, and he could not work out how to bring up the topic of going further. Alec had never even kissed anyone before Magnus. He knew Magnus must have a lot of experience. That made Alec even more nervous, but at the same time, kissing Magnus was the most fantastic feeling in the world. When they kissed, Alec's body moved naturally toward Magnus, getting as close as he could, in the instinctive way his body only otherwise moved when he was fighting. He hadn't known that it was possible for anything to feel so right or mean so much. And now they were in Paris together, alone. And anything could happen.
It was exhilarating as well as terrifying. Surely Magnus wanted to go further too. Didn't he? Alec had thought something might happen on the night of the hot air balloon, but Magnus had become understandably distracted by the demonic cult.
Alec! Isabel shouted into the phone. Are you still there? Oh, right, sorry. Yes.
Her voice softened.
Is it awkward? I know the first vacation is the make-or-break time for a couple.
What do you mean make-or-break time? You've never gone on vacation with anyone.
I know, but Clary loaned me some mundane magazines, Isabel said, her voice brightening.
Clary and Isabel's friendship had been hard won, but Isabel seemed to value it all the more for that.
The magazines say that the first trip is a crucial test for a couple's compatibility. It's when you truly get to know each other and how you work together and decide whether the relationship will work long term.
Alec felt something drop in his stomach and quickly changed the subject.
How was Simon?
It was a sign of Alec's desperation that he brought up Simon, since he did not much like the idea of his sister dating a vampire. Though, for a vampire, he seemed like a good enough guy. Alec didn't know him that well. Simon talked a lot, mostly about things from the mundane world Alec had never heard of. Isabel laughed a little too loudly.
Fine. I mean, I don't know. I see him occasionally, and he seems fine. But I don't care. You know how I am with boys. He's like a little toy. A little fanged toy.
Isabel had dated plenty of people, but she never got defensive like this. Maybe that was what made Alec feel uneasy about Simon.
Just so long as you don't become his chew toy, said Alec. Listen, I need a favor.
Isabel's tone went sharp.
Why are you using the voice?
What voice?
The I'm a shadow hunter on official business voice. Alec, you're on vacation. You're supposed to be having fun.
I am having fun.
I don't believe you. Are you going to help me or not?
Isabel laughed.
Of course I am. What are you and Magnus getting into?
Alec had promised Magnus he wouldn't tell anyone. But surely Isabel didn't count. He turned away from the crowd and covered the phone with his free hand.
I need you to keep this quiet. Mom and Dad don't need to find out. I don't want Jace to know either. There was a rustling on the phone. Alec, are you in trouble? I can be in Alicante in half an hour and Paris in three.
No, no, it's not like that. Alec abruptly realized he had neglected to glamour himself undetectable so that mundanes wouldn't overhear his conversation, but just as in New York, the crowds of Paris streamed by without paying the slightest attention to him. Cell phone conversations, no matter how public, were to be ignored. Apparently, this was a universal law.
Can you search through the Institute archives for a cult called the Crimson Hand? Of course. Can you tell me why?
Nope.
I'll see what I can do.
She didn't press him further. Isabel never had pushed, not about any of Alec's secrets. That was one of the many reasons Alec trusted his sister. On the other end of the line came the sounds of a scuffle.
Shove off, Jace!
Isabel hissed.
Actually, Alec said, could I talk to Jace for a second?
There was something he wanted to ask, and he did not feel comfortable talking about this stuff with his sister.
Oh, fine, said Isabel. Here he is.
There was another rustle, and then Jace cleared his throat and said, casually, as if he had not been fighting Isabel for the phone a minute ago.
Hey.
Alec smiled.
Hey.
He could visualize Jace, who had asked Alec to be his parabatai and then always pretended as if he did not need one. Alec was not fooled. Jace had lived in the New York Institute with them since Alec was 11. Alec had always loved Jace, found him so familiar and so dear that for a while he'd been confused about what kind of love it was. Thinking of Jace now, he realized whom the warlock woman Tessa had reminded him of. Her expression, serious but with a quiet light behind it, was exactly Jace's when he was playing the piano. Alec shook off the strange thought.
How's Paris?
Asked Jace idly.
If you're not having fun, you could come back early.
Paris is nice, said Alec. How are things?
Well, my business is looking great, and fighting demons and business is good, said Jace.
Cool. Jace, can I ask you something? If you want something to happen, and you feel like it could, but maybe the other person is waiting for you to give a signal that you're ready, that you're maybe ready. No, that you're definitely ready. Maybe. What should you do in this hypothetical scenario?
There was a pause.
Said Jace. Good question. I'm glad you came to me with this. I think you should go ahead and give a signal.
Great, said Alec.
Yes, that's what I was wondering. Thanks, Jace. Hard to work out signals on the phone, Jace said thoughtfully. I'll think about various signals and show you when you get home. Like, one signal is for there is a demon creeping up behind you and you should stab it, right? But there should be a different signal for if a demon is creeping up behind you but I have it in my sights. Well, that just makes sense.
There was another silence. Put Isabel back on the phone, said Alec.
Wait, said Jace. When are you coming home?
Isabel, said Alec.
There were sounds of another scuffle as Isabel repossessed her phone.
Sure you don't want me to come help out? Or do you and Magnus prefer to be alone?
We prefer to be alone, he said firmly. And actually, I should get back. Love you, Isabel.
Love you, said Isabel.
Oh, wait. Jay says he needs the phone back.
He says he thinks he may have misunderstood your question.
Magnus was in the same position he'd been in when Alec left. It seemed he hadn't moved at all, but the cyclone of paper, photos, and books that surrounded him was about twice as large and twice as messy.
Alec, he said brightly, his mood seemingly much improved. How is Paris?
If I were a shadow hunter based in Paris, Alec said, I would have to train twice as hard to make up for all the times I stopped for a coffee and a little something to eat.
Paris, Magnus declared, is the single greatest city on earth in which to stop for a coffee and a little something to eat.
I brought you some pain au chocolat, Alec said, holding up a now slightly wilted white paper bag.
Magnus parted the wall of books and papers like a curtain and gestured Alec within.
I found something, he said. Come in.
Alec went to put down the bag, and Magnus shook his head.
Bring the pain au chocolat with you.
Alec took a hesitant step inside and stood next to Magnus. The warlock fished a pastry out of Alec's bag with one hand and beckoned at one of the frozen images with the other, drawing it down in front of them. It was an image of a glum, green-skinned, white-haired warlock wearing a potato sack, sitting at a wooden table filled with tin mugs. That was Ragnar Fell, Alec thought. Magnus had his picture on the wall. Magnus had mentioned casually, several days after Ragnar's death, that he and the dead warlock had been friends. It was becoming very clear that they had been close. Alec wondered why Magnus had not said so when Ragnar died. But they had been in the middle of a war. Alec and Magnus had still been working out what they were to each other. Magnus had not kept it from him, exactly. Across the table from Ragnar Fell was a shirtless Magnus, who had both of his hands open, palms out. He seemed to be trying to enchant a bottle. Magnus flipped his fingers, and the photo wavered and then grew in size. He swallowed.
I remember this night in detail. We were playing a drinking game. We had previously literally lost our shirts to several cheesemongers who turned out to be gifted amateur card sharps. Somewhere between the fourth and ninth picture of Glögg, we got into a deep discussion about the meaning of life, or more specifically, how much easier life would be if there was a way we could openly use our powers without mundanes always soiling themselves and trying to burn us at the stake every time they saw a little sparkle of magic.
You and Ragnar thought creating a demon-worshipping cult would make your lives easier? Alec asked in disbelief.
The world is sometimes unkind to warlocks. Sometimes we feel a temptation to be unkind back.
There was a silence. Eventually, Magnus sighed. "We weren't talking about summoning demons," he said. "We were talking about how hilarious it would be to impersonate a demon and get gullible mundanes to do stuff."
"What sort of stuff?"
"Whatever it was we wanted. Massage our feet, run naked through the village square, throw rotten eggs at members of the clergy. You know, normal things joke cults do."
"Sure," said Alec.
"Normal things. I don't remember actually following through with it. One would think founding a cult would be memorable. In fact, I don't remember much of anything after that night. The next memory I have is almost 3 years later, heading to a vacation in South America." "That was awfully strong, Glug, but 3 years of amnesia seems excessive."
Magnus looked grim.
"The conversation, plus the 3 years of memory loss, does not look good for me. The conversation is very suspicious, and the memory loss is very convenient. I have to find the Crimson Hand immediately."
Alec nodded resolutely. "Where do we start?" There was a long silence, as if Magnus was carefully considering his next words. He eyed Alec almost as if he was wary of him. Did Magnus think Alec wouldn't be able to help?
"I'm going to start by reaching out to some sources in Downworld for information on the cult."
"What can I do? I can help you,"
Alec insisted. "You always do," said Magnus. He cleared his throat and added, "I was thinking, it seems a shame to interrupt your first time in Paris with silly problems from my past and a bunch of delusional mundanes.
You had a good time today, right?
You should enjoy yourself. This shouldn't take long. I'll be back before you even get a chance to miss me."
"How could I possibly enjoy myself," Alec said, "if you were in trouble without me?"
Magnus was still giving him that strange, careful look. Alec did not understand anything that was happening. "There's always the cabaret," Magnus murmured. He smiled, but Alec did not smile back. This was not a joke. He thought of all the bright pictures flittering through the air and crossed his arms. Alec had three close friends in the world: Isabel, Jace, and their childhood friend, Aline, who was actually more Isabel's friend than his. He had known them all and fought with them all for years. He was used to being part of a team. He wasn't used to liking someone so much, but not knowing them inside out. He'd assumed that when Magnus fought by his side, it meant they were a team now. Alec didn't know what to do if Magnus didn't want to be a team. But he knew one thing. "Magnus, I'm a shadow hunter. Shutting down demons and their worshippers is part of the job. It's most of the job. More importantly, someone has to watch your back. You're not leaving me behind." Alec suddenly felt very alone. He'd come on this trip to get to know Magnus better. But maybe it was impossible for him to know Magnus. Maybe Magnus didn't want to be known. Maybe he saw Alec as just a future one of those flying pictures, the fleeting moments that Magnus now had to struggle to recall. Because Magnus wanted to keep this whole demon cult business private, and neither of them was sure, Alec suddenly realized that private included Alec. What if Magnus really had done something terrible hundreds of years ago? What if in the lost memories, Alec would find Magnus being foolish, or callous, or cruel? Magnus leaned forward, serious for once. "If you come with me, you may not like what we find out. I may not like what we find out." Alec relaxed a fraction. He couldn't imagine Magnus ever being cruel.
"I'm willing to take a chance. So, what's our move?"
"I want some names, a meeting place, and or a copy of the Red Scrolls of Magic," said Magnus, "so I know exactly where to go. It's almost sundown. We'll make it to the Paris Shadow Market just about when it opens."
"I've never been to a shadow market," Alec remarked.
"Is the Paris one especially glamorous and elegant?" Magnus laughed. "Oh, no. It's a total dump." Chapter 5 Shadow Market.
Welcome, said Magnus, to the Arendula Tess. It was a gladiatorial arena in classical Rome. It was a cemetery. It's Paris's 68th most popular tourist stop. And tonight, it's where your fairy aunt Martha comes to buy her monthly supply of illegal newt eyeballs.
They stood at the entrance to the market, a narrow alley passing between ancient stone bleachers. To those without the sight, the alley spilled into a large, depressed circle of sand, still very clearly denoting a gladiator's pit, empty but for a few stragglers. But for the denizens of the market, it was a labyrinth of stalls crowded with downworlders, a chaos of shouts and smells. Even before they made their entrance, they were under scrutiny. Alec knew it, and was jumpy and alert. A selkie sneaked an anxious side-eye at them as he passed, then, not so subtly, veered away. Alec wore his leather jacket on top of his hoodie, pulled low over his head, shielding his face. Soft leather gloves masked the runes on his hands. He wasn't fooling anyone. Alec would never pass as anything but a child of the angel. It was obvious from his bearing, his grace, the look in his eyes. Nephilim weren't prohibited from attending the market, but neither were they welcome. Magnus was glad to have Alec beside him, but it did complicate things. In the crush of people passing through the narrow alley to get into the market proper, they had a moment of brief but intense claustrophobia. There was a smell like wet animals and stagnant water, and everyone was uncomfortably close. And then a burst of blinding light greeted their emergence into what the market denizens called La Place des Ombres. The smells were of wood smoke and spice, of incense, and of herbs drying in the sun. It was pleasantly familiar to Magnus, a constant through decades, centuries of change. The Paris Shadow Market isn't like most other shadow markets. It's the oldest in the world, and its history is political and bloody. Nearly every major conflict the downworlders had with mundanes, Nephilim, or each other before the 19th century started right here. Magnus weighed his next words. What I'm saying is, watch out. As they began to pass down the first row of stalls, Magnus noticed that they created a bubble of tension around them as they moved. Downworlders were leaning together, whispering. Some shot them accusatory glares, and a few of the vendors actually pulled their curtains down or closed their windows as they approached. Alec's brow was furrowed, his bearing stiff. Magnus stopped, made a show of reaching for Alec's hand, and clasped it tightly. A werewolf slammed his stall's window shut with a growl as they went by.
Didn't want to shop there anyway, said Alec.
Obviously not, said Magnus. Nobody wants to eat at a place called Wolfsburger. Way to come across like a cannibal guy.
Alec smiled, but Magnus suspected it was only for his own benefit. Alec's eyes continued to scan his surroundings, his vigilance a reflex trained into him his whole life. Magnus let his hand slip out of Alec's and let Alec drift a little, away and back as they walked. He knew Alec was placing himself so as to have the best vantage point for situational awareness. Magnus's first stop was a large red tent standing prominently in one of the main streets. The tent was long, tall, and narrow, divided into a front foyer area and a large main room in the back. To the left of the entrance was a sign of a wine bottle filled with red liquid, bearing the legend, "The blood is the life. Live well." Magnus pushed the red drapes to the side and poked his head into the back room, where he saw the world's first, and probably only, blood sommelier sitting behind a curved mahogany desk. Peng Fang had the appearance of a young man in his mid-twenties, his face broad and pleasant, with a mercurial air and twinkling eyes. A tuft of his black hair was dyed violent yellow, which made him resemble a friendly bee. His feet were up on the desk and he was humming a jaunty tune. Magnus had known Peng Fang casually since the early 1700s, when blood transfusions started to be all the rage. Magnus admired an entrepreneur, and Peng Fang was that above all else. He'd spotted a gap in the market, also the market, and he'd filled it.
Why, the high warlock of Brooklyn, said Peng Fang, a slow, delighted smile spreading across his face.
Just dropping in for a chat?
Usually I'm intent on business, but with you, business would be a pleasure. Peng Fang was flirty with everyone. He was so consistent that Magnus had occasionally wondered if his interest was genuine. Now, of course, it didn't matter.
Business, I'm afraid, Magnus said with a shrug and a smile.
Peng Fang mirrored the shrug. He was already smiling and continued to do so.
I never turn down a chance at a profit. Looking for potion ingredients? I have a vial of dragon demon's blood, 100% fireproof.
Sure, I constantly worry about whether my blood is going to catch on fire, said Magnus. No blood today, actually. I need some information about the Crimson Hand.
I've been hearing a lot about them lately, said Peng Fang,
then looked over Magnus's shoulder and stopped talking. Magnus turned his head and saw Alec emerging uncertainly through the curtain. Peng Fang rose from his desk and regarded Alec coldly.
My apologies, Shadow Hunter. As you can see, I am with a client. Perhaps if you return at a later time, I can be of service.
He's with me, said Magnus.
Alexander Lightwood, this is Peng Fang.
Peng Fang narrowed his eyes.
Do not make comments about my name. Obviously, my parents did not expect their little boy to become a vampire when he grew up. I do not find comments about my name humorous.
Magnus decided not to mention at that moment that Peng Fang was known as Fang Fang among his friends. Peng Fang was clearly not interested in making friends with Alec. His gaze was fixed on Alec, as though Alec might attack him at any moment. To be fair to Peng Fang, Alec's hand was resting casually on the hilt of the Seraph Blade at his side.
Hi, said Alec. I'm here with Magnus. I'm here for Magnus. No other Shadow Hunters know I'm here. We just want to know about the Crimson Hand.
After a brief silence, he added,
It's important.
What could I possibly know about them? Asked Peng Fang.
Let me assure you, Shadow Hunter, I do not do business with cults. I am strictly above board. A simple blood merchant, selling the finest legal and licensed blood to law-abiding downworlders. If you are interested in purchasing blood, High Warlock, I will gladly advise you in your selection. Otherwise, I am afraid I can't help you.
We hear they have a new leader, asked Alec.
Don't know anything about him, said Peng Fang firmly.
Him? Said Magnus. Well, that's something.
Peng Fang scowled.
You seemed willing to help a few moments ago.
The three stood at an impasse for several moments before Peng Fang sat back down at his desk and began shuffling papers.
Yes. Well, I can't have people saying I leaked information to Shadow Hunters.
We've known each other a long time, Magnus said. If you trust me, you can trust him.
Peng Fang glanced up from his papers.
I trust you. But that doesn't mean I'm going to trust Shadow Hunters. Nobody trusts Shadow Hunters.
After a moment, Alex said in a tight voice,
Come on, Magnus. Let's go.
Magnus tried to catch Peng Fang's eye as they exited. Peng Fang industriously studied his papers and ignored them. They regrouped back outside. Alec's arms were folded tightly over his chest, and he restlessly watched the crowd pass. It looked like he was Peng Fang's bouncer.
I apologize for that, Magnus said.
Magnus could not blame any downworlder for being suspicious of a Shadow Hunter, nor could he blame Alec for being insulted.
Look, Alec said, this isn't going to work. Why don't you go on ahead? I'll keep out of sight and we can meet up once you've gotten some information.
Magnus nodded.
If you want to head back to the apartment.
That's not what I meant. I meant you go ahead, and I'll keep out of sight and shadow you while you go through the market. I won't step in unless you're in danger.
Alec hesitated.
Or if you want me to go.
No,
said Magnus. I want you nearby.
Alec glanced around, a little self-consciously, then pulled Magnus to him. The clatter and bustle of the shadow market faded to a faint, low-key mumble. The tight knot of frustration in Magnus's chest eased somewhat, his eyes shut.
Everything was quiet and still and sweet.
Get away from my soul!
Yelled Peng Fang suddenly, and Magnus and Alec leaped away from one another. Magnus turned to see Peng Fang glaring through the flap of the tent.
Stop hugging shadow hunters in front of my place of business! No one is going to buy blood from someone who has a shadow hunter hugging booth in front of his stall! Go away!
Alec began to melt into the crowd passing by. He extended his hand and trailed it along Magnus's arm as he disappeared.
I'll be close, he said, just loud enough for Magnus to hear. I have your back.
He let go, and the outside world returned to Magnus in a rush. Alec was abruptly gone, blended into the background. Magnus rolled up his bottle-green silk sleeves. He tried to banish the uneasy feeling that had crept over him when Alec said,
This isn't going to work.
For the next half hour, Magnus wandered among the warlocks and fairies of the Shadow Market, trying to buy information. Now that Alec wasn't around, he was able to blend in seamlessly. He tried to seem normal and carefree, and not under a cloud of suspicion or on a clock. He dropped by Les Changelings en Cage, a stall with anti-fairy charms run by a disgruntled warlock, and Le Tombeau des Loups, the Tomb of the Wolves, a stall selling anti-werewolf magics, obviously run by vampires. He petted various illicit and strange-looking creatures who he suspected would soon be potion ingredients. He stopped several times to watch various magical demonstrations given by warlocks from faraway places, out of professional curiosity. He purchased rare spell ingredients that were available only in the shadow markets of Europe. He was going to be able to make a pack of werewolves in Mexico very happy by providing them with a potion that would restore their leader's lost sense of smell. He even acquired some new business, for when this pesky cult matter was wrapped up, of course. A fishing fleet in Amsterdam was having trouble with a school of mermaids luring their sailors overboard. He would be in touch. He did not, however, learn anything about the Crimson Hand. Magnus occasionally glanced behind him, searching for Alec. He never spotted him. It was during one of these occasional glances back that the feeling crept over Magnus, as it had on the walk after their balloon crash, that he was being watched by unfriendly eyes. There was a cold sense of threat, like bad weather coming. He murmured a spell to alert him if undue attention was being paid to him, and brushed his ears with his hands. He immediately felt a tickling sensation in his left lobe, light, as if brushed with a feather. Passing glances? Nothing out of the ordinary. Maybe it was only Alec watching. Magnus was passing a stall full of cloaks when he felt a stronger touch on his ear, two distinct flicks that nearly made him jump.
Real Selkie fur, said the stall owner, hopefully. Ethically sourced. Oh, how about this one? Fur from werewolves who wanted to be shaved for that sleek aerodynamic feeling.
Lovely, said Magnus, passing on. He turned down a side alley leading away from the main body of the market, and then again to a dead end. The flicking of his ear was still there, this time followed by a tug. His hands lit with magic, and he spoke to the empty air.
I'm flattered, but perhaps it's best we drop the coyness and talk face to face.
No one answered.
Magnus waited a few beats before letting the flames die in his hands. He walked back to the entrance of the alley. No sooner had he stepped back into civilization than he felt a hard yank on his ear. Someone was staring at him very intently.
Magnus Bane, I thought it was you.
Magnus turned toward the voice.
Johnny Rook, what are you doing in Paris?
Johnny Rook was one of the rare mundanes who had the ability to see the shadow world. He was usually based at the Los Angeles shadow market. Magnus surveyed Johnny unenthusiastically. He wore a black trench coat and sunglasses, though it was night, with short, Caesar-cut, dirty blonde hair and 5 o'clock scruff. There was something slightly off about his face. Magnus had heard a rumor that Johnny had hired fairies to permanently magically enhance his features, but if it was true, Magnus felt Johnny had wasted his money. The man was also known as Rook the Crook, and he was committed to his aesthetic.
About to ask the same of you, said Johnny, avidly curious.
Vacation? Magnus said noncommittally. How is your son? Cat, is it?
Kit, he's a good boy. Growing like a sprout. Quick hands. Very useful in my line of work.
You have your child picking pockets?
Some of that. Some passing on trifles like keys, some sleight of hand, all sorts. He's multi-talented.
Isn't he about 10 years old? Magnus asked. Johnny shrugged.
He's very advanced.
Clearly.
Looking for anything special at the market? Perhaps I can be of service.
Magnus closed his eyes and counted to 5 slowly. Against his better judgment, he said casually, What do you know about the Crimson Hand? Johnny rolled his eyes.
Culties. Worship Asmodeus.
Magnus's heart gave a hard, spiky thump.
Asmodeus?
Johnny glanced at him sharply.
Not a name you hear every day,
Magnus added, hoping that was enough explanation.
It was a name Magnus had heard oftener than he liked. In what Magnus hoped was total coincidence, Asmodeus was the Prince of Hell who had fathered Magnus himself. Would he really have set up a cult in the name of his father? They were not exactly close. He couldn't imagine having done so, even as a joke.
Would he have to tell Alec that Asmodeus was his father?
Alec had never asked who Magnus's demon parent was, and Magnus had no desire to tell him. Most warlocks were fathered or mothered by ordinary demons. It was Magnus's bad luck that his father was one of Hell's 9 princes.
Asmodeus? He said again to Johnny. Are you sure?
Johnny shrugged.
I didn't think it was some big secret. That's just what I heard somewhere.
So it might not be true. There was no point telling Alec, Magnus thought, if it might not be true. Tessa hadn't mentioned it, and she certainly would have if she'd thought the cult worshipped Magnus's father. Magnus breathed a little more freely. Alas, Johnny had a sly look on his face that Magnus knew all too well.
I might know more,
Johnny said casually. Magnus snapped his fingers. A small yellow bubble shimmered up from his fingertips and expanded until it enveloped them. The background noise of the shadow market died, leaving the two of them in a sphere of complete silence. Magnus sighed heavily. He'd been here before.
What's your price?
The information is yours for the low, low price of a small favor owed by you to me to be determined in the future.
Johnny gave him a big, encouraging grin. Magnus regarded him with what he hoped was a patrician air.
We all know where an unspecified favor ends, he said. I made a vague promise to help someone once, and spent 7 months under an enchantment living in a dryad's aquarium.
I don't want to talk about it, he added quickly as Johnny started to speak.
No nonspecific favors owed.
Okay, said Johnny.
How about a specific favor, delivered now? You know of anything that would, say, divert the attention of the Nephilim away from something? Or someone?
You're doing something the Nephilim wouldn't approve of?
Obviously, yes, said Johnny. But maybe more now than before.
I can get you some ointment, said Magnus. It discourages attention away from the person coated in it.
Ointment? Said Johnny.
It's an ointment, yes, said Magnus, a little impatient.
You don't maybe have anything you can drink or eat?
No, said Magnus. It's an ointment. That's how it comes.
I just hate being all greasy.
Well, that's the price you pay, I guess, said Magnus, for your constant criminal activities.
Johnny shrugged.
How much can I get?
I guess that depends on how much you know, said Magnus.
Magnus was surprised Johnny hadn't made a specific request. He usually tried to be in control of negotiations. For whatever reason, Johnny was desperate to get his hands on this stuff. It was not Magnus's business, why? It wasn't a crime to avoid shadow hunters. Magnus had met many shadow hunters he'd prefer to avoid,
they weren't all as charming as Alec.
My information says the Crimson Hand recently left their headquarters in Venice, said Magnus. Any idea where they went?
No, said Johnny. I do know that the Crimson Hand had a secret sanctum in the Venice headquarters where they kept their holy book. It's called the Chamber.
Johnny's smile got wider and toothier.
There's a secret password to get inside. I'll give it to you. For 10 bottles of the potion.
It's an ointment.
10 bottles of the ointment.
1, 3. Done. They shook hands. That was how you did business.
Okay. You find the stone head of the goat and speak the word Asmodeus.
One of Magnus's eyebrows rose. The password to get into the lair of the Asmodeus-worshipping cult is Asmodeus?
I don't know if you've noticed this, Johnny said thoughtfully, but cultists aren't usually the brightest the mundane world has to offer.
I have noticed that, said Magnus. I also need to know. Who's your source?
I never said I would tell you that, said Johnny.
But you will, said Magnus, because you want 3 jars of ointment and because you are compulsively disloyal.
Johnny hesitated, but only for a moment.
Warlock called Murishu. He's a former member of the Crimson Hand.
What's a warlock doing in a mundane cult? He should know better.
Who knows? Word is he offended the new leader, and he's on the run, looking for protection. He'd know more about the Crimson Hand than anyone who isn't still in it. He was in Paris not long ago, but I hear he's headed to Venice now. He'd tell you anything if you helped him out.
Just when the Crimson Hand was leaving Venice, Murishu was headed there.
Thanks, Johnny. I'll have the ointment sent to you in L.A. right when I get back from vacation.
The yellow bubble began to dissolve into gold flakes that drifted glitteringly into the breeze. As it went, Johnny grabbed hold of Magnus's sleeve and hissed with unexpected intensity.
There have been a lot of fairy disappearances in shadow markets lately. Everybody's on edge. People are saying the Crimson Hand is responsible. I hate the idea of people hunting down fairies. Stop them.
There was a look on Johnny's face Magnus couldn't remember seeing before. A mix of anger and fear. Then, the cacophony of the Paris shadow market returned in a rush.
Now, Magnus murmured, where is Alec?
That your shadow hunter? Johnny said, grinning wickedly, all hint of his previous expression gone.
You do know how to make a stir in a public place, my friend.
We're not friends, Johnny, said Magnus absently, scanning the crowd.
Johnny barked a laugh.
Alec appeared like a rabbit from a hat out from behind the corner of a nearby stall. He looked as though he had been rolling in the mud.
Your shadow hunter is filthy, observed Johnny.
Well, he cleans up nice, said Magnus.
I'm sure he's a real special dreamboat, but by a total coincidence, I have an urgent appointment elsewhere. Until next time, High Warlock.
Johnny threw him a casual salute and vanished into the crowd. Magnus let him go. He was more concerned with the state of his boyfriend. He looked Alec up and down, taking in the mud caked over his clothes and liberally sprinkled in his black hair. Alec was carrying his bow close to his body, and his chest was rising and falling hard.
Hey, honey, said Magnus. What's new?
Chapter 6. Clash by Night. 5 minutes after leaving Magnus's side, Alec watched Magnus put his hand into a cage of sharp-clawed, poisonous, demonic monkeys. Alec gripped his seraph blade lightly, but held back. He was in the shadow market. The rules were different here. He knew that. Fortunately, Magnus only patted one snarling creature with a careless ringed hand, then backed away from that stall and toward another that was being picketed by disgruntled werewolves.
"Stop the oppression of werewolves by the undead!"
said one werewolf woman, waving a Downworlder unity sign. Magnus took a pamphlet and gave the werewolf a smile, leaving her dazzled.
Magnus had that effect on people. Alec recalled how the vampire blood merchant had looked at Magnus earlier. Before Alec met Magnus,